The albino sucked in another breath of the curling vapors around his face. From our operatives there, we have learned that the Baron has gathered large, illegal stockpiles of melange. We know this is true. Yet he has not decreased his shipments.
Shaddam simmered with anger. The guildsman had to know this was a particularly sensitive subject for him. On audit, we have completed a study of Harkonnen records. The Baron has documented his spice production with particular thoroughness. The amounts seem to be correct. Shaddam had trouble following this. If his records are correct, then how did the Baron compile his hoard? And what does this have to do with tainted spice? For some unknown reason, the small, identical guildsmen shifted their position around the albino legate. Consider, sire, if the Baron steals a percentage of each spice harvest, yet continues to ship the appropriate amount according to manifest documents, then obviously he must be cutting the export shipments. He must be skimming away pure melange and diluting it with supposedly inert materials. Thus the Baron keeps the skimmed melange for himself, while providing weakened spice for navigator use. Given the evidence, there can be no other conclusion. The legate adjusted controls on his complicated polymer leatheril suit and drew a long breath of orange vapor. The Spacing Guild is prepared, in Landsrad Court, to accuse the Baron Harkonnen of malfeasance, of causing the Highliner disasters. If convicted, he would be forced to pay enough reparations to drive House Harkonnen into bankruptcy. Shaddam could not stop a grin from spreading across his face. He had been waiting for a solution to the Arrakis problem, and now this appeared like a miracle. The idea was clear in his mind, and it would take care of everything. He could not have concocted a better scenario had he tried. The guild's blatant charges were a golden opportunity. Perhaps a bit premature, but no matter. He finally had the excuse he needed to lock down his monopoly. With the recent glowing report by Hasimir Fenring, as well as similar communications from Master Researcher Ajitika and Sardaukar Commander Kando Garon, he was utterly confident in the viability of his synthetic spice. Based on the legate's accusation, Shaddam could turn his imperial sword of justice against Arrakis with full guild cooperation. Before anyone knew what was happening, the Sardaukar would wipe out all spice production in the desert, leaving House Corino with absolute and total control of the only remaining source of spice, Amal. This economic revolution would occur faster than he had ever dreamed. The mutated dwarves moved around, watching their superior, awaiting his commands. Shaddam turned to the guild legate. "We shall confiscate all spice from House Harkonnen, starting with Arrakis, and then search every other world the Baron holds." He smiled paternally. "As before, I am primarily concerned with enforcing imperial law. And, as before, the Guild and Choam will share the spoils of every illegal stockpile we uncover. I will keep none for myself." The Guild legate bowed his head into the curling melange mist. "That is most satisfactory, Emperor Corino." More for me than for you, Shaddam thought. He had been waiting for this all along. How could he ignore such an opportunity? Once he obliterated the only known source of natural melange and began widespread distribution of Amal, the few crumbs of recovered spice would become irrelevant. "While maintaining my blockade around Baikal, I shall send a large Sardaukar force to Arrakis." He arched his eyebrows. If he could avoid the mandated costs of transport for such a huge military operation, he could reap even greater benefits. "Naturally, I expect the Guild to provide Highliners for this operation." "Of course," the legate promised. playing right into Shaddam's hands. As many as you require. Life improves the capacity of the environment to sustain life. Life makes needed nutrients more readily available. It binds more energy into the system through the tremendous chemical interplay from organism to organism. Imperial Planetologist Pardit Kynes. Under the command of Thufir Hawat, the Atreides relief ships approached the blockade around the quarantined planet of Baikal. The Mentat commander issued no threats, but did not waver in his course. The flotilla carried only minor defenses, weapons that could not have driven off even a ragtag band of pirates. Facing them, the immense Sardaukar warships bristled with weaponry in a titanic show of imperial power. As Hawat's supply carriers proceeded toward the cordon, two Carino corvettes streaked across open space toward them. Even before the Sardaukar captains could issue blustery threats, Hawat opened a comlink. "Our ships fly under the colors of Duke Leto Atreides on a humanitarian mission. We bear food supplies and medical aid for plague-ravaged Baikal." "Turn back," a gruff officer responded. Either of the corvettes could have decimated the Atreides flotilla, but the Mentat did not flinch. "I see that your rank is Levenbrek. Tell me your name so that I may commit it to permanent memory." His stare at the comm screen was unflinching. Such a minor officer would never make any significant decisions. "Torrin, sir," the Levenbrek said in a sharp, formal voice. "Your house has no business here. Turn your fleet around and return to Caladan." "Levenbrek Torrin, we can help the people below survive while they replant their crops with resistant strains. Would you deny food and medicines to a starving populace? That is not the stated purpose of this blockade." "No ships may get through," Torrin insisted. "The quarantine is in place." "I see, but I do not understand. Neither, apparently, do you. I will speak with your commanding officer." "The Supreme Bashar is otherwise occupied," the Levenbrek said, trying to sound implacable. "Then we shall occupy him further." Hawat ended the transmission and signaled for his ships to continue forward, not hurrying, not deviating. The two corvettes tried to head off the procession, but the Mentat sent quick orders in Atreides' battle language, and the entire flotilla spread out and flowed around the warships, as if they were rocks in a stream. The Levenbrek continued to signal, growing more frustrated when Hawat simply ignored his commands. Finally, Torrin called for reinforcements. Thufir knew the Sardaukar would never forgive the minor officer for failing to stop a group of unarmed, sluggish cargo ships. Seven larger vessels broke away from the orbital net at Baikal and approached the Atreides ships. The Mentat knew this was a dangerous moment, because Supreme Bashar Zumgaron, an old veteran like Hawar himself, would be on edge, certain that this was a trap or a feint designed to leave the planet undefended. Hawat's weathered face showed no emotion. This was a feint indeed, but not one the Sardaukar would expect. Finally, the grim Bashar spoke directly to him. "You have been ordered to turn back. Comply immediately, or you will be destroyed." Thufir could feel the members of his crew growing uneasy, but he held firm. "Then you will no doubt be relieved of your command, sir, and the Emperor will spend a long time dealing with the political repercussions of firing upon peaceful, unarmed vessels bearing humanitarian supplies to a suffering population. Shaddam Carino has made thin excuses to cover your blatant aggressions. What will his justification be this time?" The heavy brows furrowed on the craggy face of the old military man. "What is your game, Mentat?" "I do not play games, Supreme Bashar Garon. Few people bother to challenge me because a Mentat always wins." The elder Garonne snorted. "You would have me believe that House Atreides sends assistance to Baikal? Not 8 months ago your duke bombed this place. Has Leto grown soft?"
"You do not understand Atreides' honor, any more than your Levenbrek understands the principles of quarantine," Thufir said in a chiding tone.
"Leto, the just, metes out punishment when warranted, and gives aid where needed. Are these not the principles by which House Corino established its rule after the Battle of Corin?"
The stern Bashar did not respond. Instead, speaking in a clipped code, he issued an order. 5 more ships broke away from orbit and surrounded the Atreides flotilla.
"We deny you passage. The Emperor's orders are clear."
Thufir tried another tactic.
"I am certain His Imperial Majesty Shaddam IV would not prevent his cousin from making amends to the people of Baikal. Shall we ask him directly? I can wait while you delay, and while people die on the world below." No other Landsrad family would dare challenge the Emperor's blockade, especially in Shaddam's obviously volatile state of mind. But if Thufir Hawat succeeded here in Leto's name, other houses might well be shamed into providing aid, feeding the people of Baikal, giving them strength to fight against the botanical plague. Perhaps they would view it as a passive act of censure for the Emperor's recent actions. The Atreides Mentat continued. "Send a message to Kaitain. Tell the Emperor what we intend to do here. There is no chance for us to be personally contaminated if we use orbital dump boxes to deliver our cargo. Give Emperor Shaddam the opportunity to demonstrate the benevolence and generosity of House Corino."
As Sardaukar warships tightened around the Atreides flotilla, Supreme Bashar Garonne said,
"You will divert to Sansin, Thufir Hawat. Keep your cargo ships there and await further instructions. Even now a highliner is preparing to depart from the transfer station. I will go myself to the Imperial Palace and present your request to the Emperor."
The warships herded Hawat's cargo vessels toward the asteroid supply station. Grudgingly, the Atreides flotilla followed. The warrior Mentat shot a last comment at the recalcitrant Bashar.
"Waste no time, sir. People are rioting on Baikal, and we have food right here. Do not deny it to them for long."
In truth, though, Thufir was content enough that his diversion would occupy these Imperial forces. The Atreides flotilla waited at Sansin for a full day after Supreme Bashar Garonne departed. Then, choosing an appropriate moment, Hawat sent another coded communication to his supply vessels, and they withdrew from the transfer station and headed confidently back toward Baikal, ignoring the renewed protests of the Sardaukar fleet. Another officer demanded that he stop.
"Cease your advance, or we will consider you a threat. We will destroy you."
Apparently, the disgraced Levenbrek Torin had been relieved of command. The military blockade responded with a flurry of activity. But Hawat knew that if the Supreme Bashar himself was not willing to fire upon them, none of the lower-ranking officers would take the risk.
"You have no such orders. Our supplies are perishable, and the people of Baikal are starving. Your unconscionable delay has already cost thousands, perhaps millions of lives. Do not compound your crime, sir."
The panicked officer sent other messages and powered up his weapons. But Hawat drove his ships right through their net. Even with the fastest courier, it would be days before they received a response from Kaitain. In orbit, the Atreides ships hovered over the most afflicted population centers. Fuselage bays opened, and self-propelled dump boxes dropped into the atmosphere, giant unmanned cubes tumbling and breaking. Simultaneously, Thufir transmitted a message to the citizens below, extolling the mercy of Duke Leto Atreides, and telling them to accept these gifts in the name of humanity. He had expected an appalled prime magistrate to respond, but in a comlink response, the Mentat learned that riots had already cost the politician his life. His frightened successor insisted that he bore no grudge against House Atreides, especially not now. The Sardaukar blockade ships would probably prevent the now-empty Atreides ships from departing the system. But Thufir would deal with that in due course. He hoped he had done what was necessary, causing the appropriate stir on Kaitain. Now he could afford to wait. According to Duke Leto's timetable, the Atreides assault forces would even now be descending upon Ix. When a newly arrived courier, Skimmer, rushed from the Sansin complex and was intercepted by the Sardaukar flagship, Hawat assumed it was the return of Supreme Bashar Garon. An hour later, in his vanguard ship, the warrior Mentat was surprised to receive the news that the Emperor had not deigned to give a response about what he called the minor Atreides matter at Bayakal. Instead, he had recalled his Supreme Bashar. Intercepting a radio message between ships, Thufir learned that it was for a major new strike. Thufir Hawat's mental projections had not foreseen this. His mind spun without locking onto a solution. A major new strike? Was this a reference to Ix? Or an imperial retaliation against Caladan? Had Duke Leto already lost? Every extrapolation suggested by his complex mind gave him cause for alarm. The timing was terrible. Perhaps Leto had been lured into disaster after all. It is not always the same thing to be a good man and a good citizen. Aristotle of Old Earth. Though Duke Leto Atreides rarely made formal trips to Kaitain, his arrival at the Imperial Palace aroused little interest. The magnificent structure was a flurry of high-level diplomatic and political activity. No one paid attention to yet another duke. Accompanied by a small retinue of servants, Leto rode in a diplomatic transport toward the reception wing of the palace. The air smelled of trumpet flowers and aromatic enhancers that concealed vehicle exhausts. Though burdened by concerns for Duncan and the Atreides soldiers, for Thufir and his bluff against the Bayakal blockade, and for the frightening silence from Romber and Gurney, Leto maintained the calm demeanor of a professional diplomat and leader on an important mission. Despite the pressures, though, he eagerly looked forward to seeing Jessica. Their baby was due in mere days. Liveried guards ran alongside the elegant floater car. The vehicle was at least 3 centuries old, with red velvet seats. The golden lion hood ornament swiveled to the left and right, opening its jaws, baring its teeth, and even roaring whenever the black mustachioed driver touched the horn pad. The Duke was not particularly impressed by the gadgetry. With his speech to the Landsrad, he would soon be throwing fuel on the fire. Shaddam would be furious about the attack on Ix, and Leto feared the damage would be irreparable. But he was willing to sacrifice all that to do the right thing. He had ignored the injustice for too long. The Imperium must never think him soft and indecisive. Along the route of crystal-paved boulevards, Corino banners fluttered in a gentle breeze. Immense buildings stretched to a cloudless blue sky, too perfect for Leto's tastes. He preferred the changing weather of Caladan, even the beauty and unpredictability of storms. Kaitain was too tame, having been transformed into a caricature world taken from a fantasy film book. The floater car slowed at the palace reception gate, and Sardaukar guards waved them through. The mechanical lion roared again. Ominous weapons were plainly in view, but Leto had eyes only for the arrival platform. He caught his breath. Lady Jessica stood waiting for him in a golden parasilk dress that clung to her rounded body, emphasizing her abdomen. But even such elegance could not overshadow the radiance of her beauty as she smiled at him. 4 Bene Gesserit sisters hovered around her.
As Leto stepped onto the oil tile pavement, Jessica hesitated and then hurried toward him, her walk still graceful, despite her ungainly size. Jessica paused, as if concerned that embracing him in public might not be proper. Confident in himself, though, Leto cared nothing for appearances. He closed the gap between them and gave her a long, passionate kiss. "Let me have a look at you." He pulled back to admire her. "Ah, you are as lovely as a sunset." Her oval face had tanned from time spent in the palace gardens and solarium. She wore no jewelry and did not require it. He placed his calloused palm against her stomach and held it there, as if trying to feel the baby's heartbeat. "It appears I arrived with no time to spare. You were barely showing at all when you left me alone on Caladan." "You are here to deliver a speech, not a baby, my Duke. Will we be able to spend time together?"
"Of course."
His tone grew more distant as he noticed the scrutiny of the Bene Gesserit, as if they were taking notes on his performance. At least one of them showed signs of disapproval. "After my speech to the Landsrat, I may need to go into hiding." He gave her a wry smile. "Therefore, your company would be most welcome, my lady." At that moment, Emperor Shaddam emerged from the imperial residence, walking briskly in a straight line as guards, attendants, and advisers swarmed around him like gnats. Sardaukar officers, gentlemen in tailored suits, ladies with high-coiffed hairdos, servants guiding suspensor-borne suitcases and trunks. From the hangar wing of the reception gate, a spectacular processional barge drifted forward, piloted by a tall man who was almost completely hidden beneath loose, fluttering robes, as if he were a living banner. The Emperor looked ready for war. He had forsaken his whale fur cape and chains of office for a crisp gray Sardaukar uniform outlined with silver braids, epaulets, and a Berseg's black gold-crested helmet. He was scrubbed and polished, from his skin to the medals on his chest to his shiny black boots. Spotting the Duke, Shaddam walked over to him, excessively pleased with himself. Jessica bowed formally, but the Emperor paid no attention to her. Like Leto, Shaddam IV had hawk-like facial features and an aquiline nose, and, like Leto, he harbored important secrets. "I apologize that pressing matters prevent me from receiving you more formally, cousin. The Sardaukar forces require my presence for a major operation." An immense war fleet awaited him on the staging grounds. So many ships laden with soldiers and materiel that 3 guild highliners had been retained to transport them, along with 2 more escort highliners in a show of bravado and strength from the guild itself.
"Is it anything I need concern myself with, sire?"
Leto tried to keep the questions and anxiety from his face. Was Shaddam playing games with him? "I have it all under control." Leto tried to cover his relief. "I had hoped you would be present for my speech in the Landsrat Hall tomorrow, sire." In fact, he had expected to face down the Emperor there, aided by a groundswell of popular support from the other nobles. "A major Sardaukar operation? Where?" "Yes, yes, I'm sure your announcement will be very important. The opening of a new fishery or some such thing on Caladan? Unfortunately, duty calls me away." His baritone voice was pleasant, but his green eyes gleamed with cold cruelty. The Duke gave a formal bow and took a step backward to stand at Jessica's side. "When I deliver my words to the Landsrat, sire, I will be thinking about you. I wish you success on your mission. You can review my remarks at your leisure when you return."
"At my leisure? I have an imperium to manage. I have no leisure, Duke Leto."
Before he could answer, Shaddam noticed the jewel-handled knife sheathed at Leto's waist.
"Ah, is that the blade I gave you at the end of your trial by forfeiture?"
You told me to carry it with me as a reminder of my service to you, sire. I have never forgotten. I remember. Finished with the conversation, Shaddam turned back toward the processional barge that would take him to the waiting war fleet. Leto sighed. Since the Emperor's attention was not on him, the new military operation must not involve Ix, Baikal, or Caladan. Therefore, it was to the Duke's advantage that Shaddam would not be present when he made his announcement and justification for the Atreides' assault on Ix. Romber would be firmly seated in the Grand Palais before anyone in the Imperial government could mount a response. He smiled as Jessica escorted him into the palace. Perhaps everything will work out after all. Any training school for free citizens must begin by teaching distrust, not trust. It must teach questioning, not acceptance of stock answers. Kamar Pilru, Ambassador in Exile for Ix. He had never been averse to taking risks, but now Kater actually relished them. It was time to be overt. During his work shifts, he whispered into the ears of strangers as they labored alongside him, selecting those who appeared the most oppressed. One by one, the bravest among them took up the rallying cry. Even subboid workers, whose minds were too dim to comprehend political implications, came to understand how they had been betrayed by the Tleilaxu. Years ago, the invaders had seduced them with promises of a new life and freedom, but their lot had only grown progressively worse. Finally, the oppressed population had more than a vague hope. Romber had truly returned. Their long nightmare would be at an end. Soon. Waiting in a tiny alcove where he was supposed to meet his companions, Prince Romber heard a scuffle down the corridor and powered up his synthetic limbs, ready to fight. Leto's troops were due to arrive within hours, and Kater had already slipped up to the surface, crawling through cramped ducts and emergency shafts so that he could plant the last few smuggled explosive wafers at key places in the Sardaukar surface defenses. A few well-timed blasts would leave the port of entry canyon unprotected against the arriving Atreides army. But all their work would be for naught if Romber was discovered here too soon. The noise grew closer. Then, scarred Gurney Halleck lurched into the alcove carrying a broken body. The corpse looked barely human, with smooth, waxy features, lifeless eyes, and a doll-like head that lolled on a snapped neck. Face dancer, posing as a subboid. I thought he showed too much curiosity in me. I took a chance, deciding he had to be more than one of your feeble-minded workers. He dropped the dead shape-shifter in a heap on the stone floor. So I broke his neck. Good thing, too. The hidden enemy is the greatest threat. He looked intently at Romber and added, I think we have a serious problem. They know about us now. To Count Fenring's surprise, the master researcher made no overt move against him, but he still felt like a prisoner. Never taking his safety for granted, the Count remained alert, playing along until he could find an opportunity to escape. He had seen many disturbing behaviors and side effects among the people who had consumed too much synthetic melange, including the Sardaukar. Very bad. The diminutive Tleilaxu scientist, increasingly erratic and unpredictable in his behavior, spent an entire morning in his office showing numbers to the Imperial Spice Minister, demonstrating production enhancements and the quantities of amal that his axolotl tanks could produce to keep his program going for just a little while longer. The Emperor will have to dole it out carefully at first, as rewards for those who are most loyal to him. Only a few should receive this blessing. Only a few are worthy. Yes, Fenring still had many questions about the synthetic melange, but saw too much danger in asking them. He sat across the desk from Ajitika, Examining hard copy documents and many hollows, the master researcher passed across to him. Ajitika was filled with uncontrollable nervous energy. He had a glazed, defiant look on his pinched face, combined with a supreme haughtiness, as if he considered himself a demigod. All of Fenring's instincts screamed warnings, and he just wanted to kill the man and be done with it. Even guarded carefully, a deadly fighter like Count Hasimir Fenring could find a thousand ways to commit murder. But he would never escape unscathed. He saw the fanatical loyalty, the hypnotic control the master researcher had over his personal guards and ferociously devoted staff, even, most disturbingly, on the Sardaukar troops. Other changes were happening as well. In recent days, the Ixion populace had grown unruly and dissatisfied. Incidents of sabotage had increased tenfold. Graffiti had blossomed on the walls like arrakeen flowers in the morning dew. No one knew what had triggered it after so much time. Ajitika's response had been to squeeze even harder, further restricting the minimal freedoms and rewards the people retained. Fenring had never approved of the draconian tactics the Tleilaxo employed against the Ixians. He considered it short-sighted politics. Day by day the unrest increased and pressure built, as if a lid had been clamped on a boiling pot. The master researcher's office door slammed open, and Commander Kando Garon marched in. The young Sardaukar leader had tangled hair and a rumpled uniform with dirty gloves, as if he no longer bothered with a military dress code. In his strong grip, he dragged a small, weak creature, one of the suboid workers. Garon's eyes were dark and dilated, flicking about with rapid movements. His jaw was clenched, his lips curled in feral displeasure mixed with triumph. He looked more like a ruthless bully than the commander of disciplined imperial troops. Fenring felt a flutter of uneasiness in his chest. "What is this?" Ajitika snapped.
"I believe it's a suboid," Fenring said dryly.
The Tleilaxu researcher scowled with distaste. "Take that filthy creature out of here." "First, listen to him." Garon tossed the pale worker to the floor. The suboid scrambled to his knees and looked from side to side, not comprehending where he was or what kind of trouble he was in. "I told you what to do." Garon kicked the weak man in the hip. "Say it." The suboid fell over, gasping in pain. The Sardaukar commander lunged at him, grabbing one of his ears with a gloved hand. He twisted until blood dripped from it. "Say it!"
"The prince has returned,"
the suboid said, then repeated it over and over like a mantra.
"The prince has returned. The prince has returned."
Fenring felt hairs prickle on the back of his neck.
"What is he talking about?" Ajitika asked.
"Prince Romber Vernius." Garon nudged the suboid, ordering him to say more. Instead, the simple-minded man whimpered and repeated the phrase.
"He's talking about the last survivor of the renegade Vernius family, hmm?" Fenring pointed out. "He is still alive, after all." "I know who Romber Vernius is, but it has been so many years. Why should anyone care about him now?"
Garon slammed the suboid's head against the hard floor, making him scream in pain.
"Stop!" Fenring said. "We need to interrogate him further."
"He knows nothing more." Garon balled his gloved fist and pounded the helpless man's back. Fenring could hear ribs and vertebrae crack. The wild commander punched again, an out-of-control pile driver. The suboid drooled blood onto the floor, twitched, and died. Sweating and agitated, the Sardaukar commander straightened. His eyes were bright and feral, as if looking for something else to kill. Blood had spattered all over his uniform, and he didn't seem to mind.
"Just a suboid," Ajitika said with a sniff. "You're correct, Commander. We would have gotten no further information anyway."
The master researcher thrust a small hand into his robes and withdrew a tablet of compressed synthetic spice. "Here you are." He tossed it to Garon, who snatched the tablet out of the air with lightning-fast reflexes and gobbled it, like a trained dog receiving a treat. Garone's wild-eyed gaze focused on Fenring. Then the officer strode toward the door, leaving the bloody mess on the floor. "I'll go find others to interrogate." Before he could depart, loud alarms rang out. Fenring leaped to his feet, while the master researcher looked around, more in annoyance than in fear. He had not heard such sirens in the 22 years that he had resided on Ix. From the rhythm of the alarm, Commander Garone knew what was happening. "We are under attack, from the outside!" The Atreides military fleet dropped through the atmosphere and slammed into the Sardaukar defensive grid. Attacking warships descended into the port of entry canyon, where hundreds of grottos were covered by heavy doors used for deliveries and exports. Kater's sabotage bombs went off, startling the Sardaukar and knocking out their main sensor nets and installations. The surface-to-air guns went dead as control decks shorted out. The bored Tleilaxu perimeter guards could not respond to the astonishing attack that had appeared out of nowhere. The Atreides ships launched explosives, melting armor plates and blasting rock. Sardaukar scrambled to mount a defense, but after so many years of complacency, their weapon stations were designed to quell internal disturbances and intimidate would-be infiltrators. Led by Duncan Idaho, the fleet arrived exactly on schedule. Transports landed and soldiers boiled out, their swords drawn for close-in shield fighting where lasguns could not be used. They howled a war cry for their duke and for Prince Romber. The battle for Ix had begun. There is no mystery about the source from which love draws its savage power. It comes from the flow of life itself, a wild, torrential outpouring that has its source in the most ancient of times. Lady Jessica, Journal Entry. When Jessica's labor began, the Bene Gesserit were ready for her. Few understood the full reasons, but every one of the sisters knew this long-awaited child was important. The sunny birthing room had been laid out in accordance with Anirul's exacting specifications. Careful attention was paid to ancient feng shui practices, as well as to lighting and airflow patterns. Villa roses, silver orchids, and porotrin carnations grew inside suspensor-borne planter globes above the bed. The room on the top level of the Imperial Palace was open to the eyes of the universe, reaching nearly to the fluffy underlayers of weather-control clouds. Jessica lay back, concentrating on her body and her environment, and most of all on the child anxious to come out of her womb. She avoided eye contact with Reverend Mother Mohiam, afraid her guilt would show on her face. "I have challenged her before, resisted her dictums, but never in a matter of such consequence." Soon the sisters would know her secret. "Will the Reverend Mother kill me for my betrayal?" In the hours after the birth, Jessica would be completely vulnerable. In her old teacher's eyes, failure would be a greater crime than outright treachery. Between labor spasms, Jessica inhaled the flower's sweet scents and thought of far-off Caladan, where she wanted to be with her duke and their child. "I shall not fear." Mohiam sat nearby, watching her prized student attentively. A drained-looking Lady Anirul had insisted on coming to the birthing room, despite medical sister Yosa's stern admonitions. Who could resist the command of the Kwisatz mother at such a time? Heavily medicated, Anirul claimed to have made a temporary peace with the clamor in her head. Jessica tried to rise out of deference, but the emperor's wife wagged a stern finger at her. "Put on the birthing gown we have provided for you. Lie back and concentrate on your muscles. Prepare your mind and body, as you have been taught. I will not have anything go wrong with this delivery, not after waiting for 90 generations. Yosa came closer, touched Anirul's arm. "My lady, she has just begun dilating. We will call you when the hour approaches.
It will be some time yet before she—" Anirul cut her off. "I have already borne 5 daughters to the Emperor. This young woman will heed my advice." Jessica dutifully removed her clothes and donned the long Kai sateen gown Anirul had provided. It was so light and smooth that she barely felt it against her skin. As she climbed back onto the curved birthing bed, Jessica felt a tingle of anticipation that overcame her worries. "When I leave this bed, I will have a son, Leto's son." For 9 months she had nurtured and protected this baby. Until 12 days ago, when a sensory-projected Reverend Mother Mohiam had shown her the truth of the Kwisatz Haderach program, she had thought only of her love for her Duke and how much he needed another son after the tragic death of Victor. At Anirul's side, Mohiam wrinkled her lips in a smile. "Jessica will do well enough, my lady. She has always been my finest student. Today she will show the worth of all the training I have given her." Overwhelmed by the thought of what these powerful women might do, Jessica wished Leto could be with her now. He would never allow harm to come to her or their child. They had spent the previous evening together, and she'd been grateful just to hold him again in her bed, her skin touching his. To Jessica, such gentle comfort mattered more than moments of high passion. By the soft light of glow globes in their chambers, Jessica had noticed a change in the Duke. He had become his old self again, the hard but powerful Leto Atreides she loved, more alive than he had been in a long time. But he was scheduled to speak to the Landsrad today. The Duke of a great house had far more important duties than hovering anxiously at the bedside of his concubine. In the birthing room now, surrendering to the natural processes of her body, Jessica lay back and closed her eyes. She had no option but to cooperate with the Bene Gesserit and hope. "I can bear another child, a daughter next time, if they let me live." Jessica knew she had preempted their plans by moving the male birth up by a full generation. Still, genetics was an uncertain science, the gambling dice of a higher, undefined power. Could my son be the one anyway? It was a frightening, exhilarating possibility. Opening her eyes, she saw 2 medical sisters move in like sentinels on either side of her bed, whispering to each other in a language even Jessica did not understand. They checked diagnostic equipment while touching probes and sensors to her skin. At the foot of the bed with Yosa, Lady Anirul watched everything, her doe eyes deeply sunken above her hollow cheeks. Like a person risen from her deathbed, the Emperor's wife instructed the women in every detail, making them nervous and irritated. Yosa's concern was divided between Jessica and Lady Anirul. "Please, my lady, this is simply a routine delivery. There is no need for your attentions. Return to your own chambers and rest. I have a new prescription for you to quiet the voices of other memory." Yosa reached into her pocket. Anirul waved the smaller woman aside. "You understand nothing. You have already given me too many drugs.